Last week we talked about it's my duty to inform you that it's hopeless. And just to be clear about that, we're not talking about some kind of depression or despair. We're simply talking about the hopelessness of ego's games, meaning that all of our attempts, and there are many, many of them, in each and every moment to escape from that little moment of groundlessness, that experience of open space, they don't work. That's what we mean when we say, it's my duty to inform you that it's hopeless. And because we don't realize this, because we don't realize the truth of hopelessness, therefore we create what we call karma, which is what we're going to talk about tonight. So again, the very first thing that happens in our experience, each and every moment when we have sort of contact with our world, first thing that happens each and every time, very abruptly, is there's, at least just for an instant, even if we don't notice it, there's experience of what we call basic goodness or open space. In that moment, there's no labels, there's no judgments, there's no interpretations, there's no opinions, there's no for or against, good or bad. It happens before all of that comes up. So it's a moment of what we call unconditional space. Unconditional here means it's unconditional because it's not a product of circumstance. It's not produced by something else. There's just that. Openness. As we say, gasp, takes your breath away. Moment of open space. When we experience open space, it's almost, the way we experience it frequently is just, it's as though we got hit by something. There's some kind of momentary shock or surprise. Srimad Rinpoche always used to go, we would talk about it. And out of that, there's some kind of surprise, and then we freeze or we panic. And we try to remove ourselves from that experience. We try to actually separate from that space. Separate out from that space. And he used to talk about it. He said, as if you were making some sort of vegetable soup and a carrot, which was being sort of boiled down, tried to pop up and say, but I'm a carrot, you can't do this to me. Or if, as if a wave tried to separate itself out from the ocean, pretend that it was something other than the ocean, or if a cloud tried to escape from the sky. In other words, when there's that kind of surprise or startle, when there's that moment of openness, we think that we have to do something. We have to do something. We have to cover that moment up. And because we've talked about this before, we feel so vulnerable, so raw. And each time we do that, we could say that from the point of view of creating karma, we're cutting our own throat. We do it because we're looking for some kind of company, something to keep us company. It's too open, and we feel too alone. So we look for some kind of entertainment. So we begin to collect whole bunches of thoughts and emotions and concepts, jumble them all together, and what we come up with is what we call ego, or cocoon. Which, if you look at it, isn't really anything. It's just a collection of stuff, which we put together in our minds, and we call it me. Me. There's nothing really there, but we call it me. Me and my world. So what we call karma is based on panic. In fact, we could say that panic is just another word for ego. Karma is produced by panic, some kind of impulsive little move that we make. Just for a moment, we lost our ground, our sense of security, of knowing who we are, whether we think we're the worst person in the world or the best. It doesn't really matter. We think we're somebody or other. And we lose that ground. And instead of trusting in the openness, trusting that space, instead of giving in to that bigger world, we try to do something. We try to sort of like Humpty Dumpty got shattered, and we try to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And it's just like in our lives, we see little manifestations of that all the time. Just the little moves we make, you know, we play with our hair, or we feel nervous, so we might put some chewing gum or Lifesaver in our mouth. Or we feel lonely, so we pick up our cell phone. We feel anxious, instead of relating with our anxiety, we turn on the TV. Or the internet. Internet's great for it, right? Get on MSN, MSN Messenger, can talk to the world. Or we go play a video game. We do something. Pick up a magazine. There's just some kind of little shift. There's a moment of open space, and then this little trick we play on ourselves, which we just turn away from it. Just a little move that we make, little leap, little twist, some slight manipulation, which seems kind of harmless. What's the big deal? But then we go too far. We keep going. There might be a flicker of thought, I like that person, I don't like that person, but then we exaggerate the whole thing. Basically, just to have something to do, just for entertainment, just to keep ourselves busy. And before we know it, we've given birth to a whole world of passion, aggression, and ignorance. Passion meaning trying to seduce the world into our point of view, our side. Aggression, obviously we reject our experience, we try to push it away, we don't like it. And ignorance is that we'd like to just play deaf and dumb and forget the whole thing. And because we involve ourselves in passion, aggression, and ignorance, not just once, but over and over, again and again, according to the Buddha's teaching, something like 60 times in the blink of an eye, so a lot. Because of that, we create what's called karma. Now it's important to realize that it's just a little mistake that we make. It's not as we see in some traditions where they talk about original sin, like you made a big, big, big mistake way back when. You know, in the Garden of Eden, somewhere back there, there was a big mistake made, and now we're going to have to pay for it forever. But it's just a little mistake that we make each and every moment. It's based on, not original sin in this case, but just some kind of misperception, misunderstanding, that we thought that if we ignored that space, if we tried to get away from that confusion or that anxiety or that groundlessness, that's what would make us happy. That's what would make us feel at least more comfortable or safer and secure, which would be great, except that it doesn't work. So there's some kind of little push. In fact, one of the traditional analogies is like the push when you're giving birth to a baby. You know, we're trying to give birth to something, and we push. Something, you know, is going to be that we can possess or own, our world, me. And again, the main point here is that it's not something that happened a long time ago, but it's something that we're doing right now. Karma is not created really, truly in the past. We'll be talking about that more as we go along. But it's something that we do each and every time when it happens. We're doing it on the spot right now. And the experience that comes back to us in each and every moment is a result of that process that we just described. And we could say, but this is real. It feels pretty real, right? Whatever's happening to us. Or we could say, something's really happening. I mean, I really am pissed off. That person really did do something terrible to me, or that, you know, this is really what I need or want or hope for, or whatever. But if we look, what's coming back to us in each and every moment of our life is simply reflection of ourselves. Just like in a mirror. Just like the mirror reflects back, you know, how you look. In this case, it's reflection. The world comes back to us. Our experience comes back to us as a reflection of our own psychology. In other words, our own state of mind in this very moment, right now. So one could say, well, maybe that reflection is real. This is real. Me, my world, what's happening to me? This is solid. this is real. But when we see a reflection in a mirror, we know that nothing's really happening. It's just a reflection. According to these teachings, in this case, it's just the same. It's just like a reflection in the mirror. You're seeing your own state of mind. You're experiencing your own state of mind. It's coming back to you in the form of your experience of the moment. That's what's called karma. Because we don't recognize this, because we label that reflection as other and pretend that it's real, because of that, we continue to cause harm, first of all to ourselves and then also, unfortunately, to others. So, just one personal story about this is that one time I was in Kansas City, I was teaching a seminar, Shambhala Training Weekend, and I was trying to get ready for my talk. It was in the morning. Nobody else was in the house. Whoever I was staying with, going off to work. I was in the bathroom and I was running the shower, getting ready and sort of speeding, you know. All of a sudden I looked up and there was a man standing in the bathtub without any clothes on. You know who it was, of course. It was me. Turns out, I noticed that the, the door that you closed was actually a mirror. It's just like that. It's just like that. You see your own reflection, and you panic, and you freak out. You regard it as other, and off you go. Best simple description of karma that I ever heard was actually something that an 8-year-old boy told me many years ago. He said, what karma is, he said, when you make an angry face or an ugly face, the mirror makes an angry face back at you. That was Kesar, by the way. So, we have to be very careful about this because it's almost a dangerous thing to say. And we'll be talking more about that in a moment. But there's not really any thing, like an actual solid thing, called karma. Like you did this horrible thing and now you're going to pay for it. There's a thing called karma and it's going to follow you around like some sort of monster and eat you up, right? Or a good thing, you know, same good karma, same thing. So this leads to, not understanding this leads to a lot of misconceptions. People will talk about burning up your karma like this. Know, some sort of reservoir, big, you've got a pantry where it's all hanging out. Maybe if you set fire to it for long enough, you could eventually burn it up or burn it out. Or people will say, you know, this horrible thing is happening to me. This is my karma because I did such and such. It's my bad karma, or this is your good karma. Technically, all of those are misunderstandings. Karma is not technically something that you've inherited, good or bad, way back when. It's not that you were a good boy, good girl, bad boy, bad girl back then, so therefore now good things or bad things are happening to you. But we're creating karma at this very moment, on the spot, right now, by not recognizing this process that I talked about of basically, same as meditation, gap, open space, panic, solidify things. That's how we create karma, right now. But the good news about that, the bad news, so to speak, is that we keep doing it. Who knows why, but we do. We just keep doing it over and over again and again. But the good news is that because we're creating karma right now, there's the potential to dissolve karma at this very moment right now. Because of that, human beings have the potential to attain enlightenment. Because actually there's freedom. There's karma. You could say there's karma. Even though it's not real, there still is karma. But there's also freedom. In other words, you can't change the past. So in terms of what you're experiencing right now, that's coming back to you because of that impulsive move that you've already made, you can't change what you're experiencing, But you do have the freedom in terms of you can choose what to do next, which, of course, in our case, what we recommend is that we wake up. We wake up to this whole process right now. But as we said, we're still playing this game of passion, aggression, and ignorance. This game is based on meanness, believing in a self. And we're doing it all the time. And each time we play that game, each time there's that kind of reaction, that kind of trying to escape from the openness of that moment, peace and goodness, that space isn't doing anything. It doesn't do anything. So it just simply reflects your own state of mind right back to you. That's why Gaysar said, you make an angry face, mirror perfectly reflects that angry face right back to you in the form of experience that comes to you. So you might ask, well, then why do they talk about your karma from past lives? It's because sometimes we're so thick and so numb that it takes a long time for that message or feedback to get through. But it's still based on the struggle that you're involved with right now. Right now, this very moment, right now. And we have to be careful when we say these things. Because someone could say, oh, there's no karma. You know, it's all just an illusion. It's just a reflection in the mirror. So let's just go out and do whatever we want. Well, that doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. Padmasambhava, the great Buddhist teacher, said that very famous saying. He said, your view, your understanding of the teaching should be as vast as the sky. In other words, your view, your intellectual understanding, we should understand or try to understand that in reality, if you were seeing the true nature of things, if we were like that gentleman whose mind was like this guy, what we would see is that in truth there's no such thing as karma, as we're making the whole thing up. It's an illusion. It's a game. It's a trick we're playing on ourselves. But this is a huge, maybe the most important but in the whole teachings of Buddhism. We have to be very honest with ourselves, and at this moment in our lives, we don't recognize that. You know, just thinking that, just telling ourselves that or intellectually understanding that's not enough. You have to actually experience it 200%. And because we don't recognize that, because we miss that point constantly all the time, because we do take those reflections to be real, therefore, the law of karma, the law of cause and effect, operates with complete, total efficiency. And you can't get away from it. And that's where it's my duty to tell you that it's hopeless. There's a saying in Buddhism, cause and effect cannot be escaped. If you put out, every time we involve ourselves in a little twist, little manipulation, little trying to escape, little hiding, little trying to make things a little better, a little indulging in making things worse than they are, each time the mirror just reflects that right back to you. Right back to you. And then sometimes like that reflection, as we said, might take a little time to get through, but it always comes back to you. The more you practice, what starts happening is reflections start coming back to you more quickly. Immediately is probably a better word. You know, it's like you feel like you're getting bounced around because you can't get away with anything. It's like you're surrounded by your own projections. And because of this, we said our view should be as vast as the sky. Our understanding that in truth the whole thing is empty. But because we still take things to be solid, we have to be honest with ourselves. And therefore our conduct, our behavior, our attention to detail should be outrageously precise. So, on the one hand, there's no such thing as karma, really, truly. I mean, that's a very scary thing to say. But the instructions of Vidyadhara, when I talked to Vidyadhara about teaching the young people, he said, give them the most advanced teachings. They'll understand. But at the same time that we could say there's no karma, we're making the whole thing up. The other very important thing is that since we're still making the whole thing up, we're still doing it, karma is extremely real. It's very, very real. Another way we could talk about this, for example, another so-called advanced Buddhist teaching is to say, if you actually look at your experience with great precision and insight, what we would see is that there's no link between the present moment and the past. None. There's no link between the present moment and the past. But again, to say something like that could be very dangerous if we don't understand it properly, because we could say, well, if there's no link between the present moment and the past, then I can just do anything, right? Well, why? Because we still think there is a link between the present moment and the past. And again, it doesn't matter how many times we tell ourselves, we may have a glimpse of that, but still, we are continuing, no matter what kind of glimpse we've had, no matter what kind of intellectual understanding we have, we still live our lives, obviously, as though there is a link between the present moment and the past. And because of that, because we lead our lives that way, we're still creating karma, real or not. Doesn't very matter very much. It's still pretty darn painful for us and others. We're still creating karma every moment of our lives. I'll give you an example. Somebody says, well, what would be a horrible thing that somebody could say to you that have a hard time? Anything. They walk up to you on the street or in school and say what? Oh, I could come up with a bunch. Okay, you're ugly or whatever, you know. Or let's be, fuck you. Okay. What do we usually do at that point?
Fuck you, too.
Right?
Fuck you, too.
Right, perfect time. Or, you know, maybe if one of these big guys, you might, hopefully not, but you might, you know, at least feel like you want to punch him out. You might do something. So let's just look at that example, okay? And you guys... Joey and Kayla, or you guys have been teaching people a lot. So that person says, I'm deliberately choosing an extreme example. Pretty extreme. It could be worse. Fuck you. What's the first thing that happens?
You get angry.
Before that.
You're
shocked. Shock. Before that.
Nothing.
Well, that's pretty much it. There's that little moment of open space. Just for an instant. We may not see it because karma happens very quickly. Right? And just before that, there's just open space. You know, in other words, at that moment, that first moment, those words don't mean anything. It's just the sounds. Fuck you. And then we put the whole thing together. That means that. They're talking about me. I mean, we may not say all these words, but there's this whole process. And then, of course, we react. That's the process of karma right on the spot. So in truth, if we were to look at it, that person says, fuck you, there's a moment of open space, and then there's no real necessarily any link between that and what happens next. But we make it up. We impose this meaning on the whole thing. That's an insult. How dare, you know, whatever. Whatever we, I'm not going to take that from that guy, right? Whatever it is. And then we jump. We twist. And so then we strike out, and then what do? They strike out back. See, that's the whole thing right there. So for us, at this point in our lives, all of us, everyone in this room, we can't say there's no karma. It's good to understand that, because we might start to moment to notice that there is no real link between the present moment and the past. And the only link is the one that we create in our minds, which isn't real. But if we were to say, well, there's no link, there's no karma, so I can do whatever I want, that would be a disaster. Why? Because we're pretending. And we say that, and it's good to see that or to try to notice that, but we're still pretending. We don't really mean it, because we still think there is. Otherwise, we wouldn't jump. And point here is you can't fool karma. You can't fool the mirror. You can't outsmart the space. It's too big. It's too precise. It's too accurate. That mirror is too clear. And what you do, as Gesar said, comes back to you. You make that angry face, the world's going to come back to you in that way. So that's why, for example, in the very traditional Buddhist teachings, they might take vows, for example. In the monastic tradition, they take these, and you know, sometimes in our lives, you might go to program, and you take these vows every day. Not to kill, not to lie, not to steal, not to engage in sexual misconduct, whatever the whole list is. Why? Because all of those behaviors are based on some kind of impulsive move. Some kind of cover-up. They're all based on some kind of twist. I mean, obviously, you can't kill somebody without some kind of twist that you do with your mind. You know, some kind of ignoring something. That's ignoring something about reality and just good common sense. Therefore, when someone takes a vow to refrain from those activities, it's one way to begin to notice the origin of karma, which is that little twist. Little twist that happens over and over again and again. So there's a story about this. It's a story of two great teachers in our tradition, one of whose names was Naropa, and one of his teacher, whose name was Talopa. And some of you have heard various versions of this story about Naropa is this great scholar. He's like the president of the university, you could say it, along the university, and people come from all around to hear him teach. He's an amazing teacher, has incredibly precise intellectual understanding of the Buddhist teachings. And then one day he encounters this woman who basically acts as a mirror back to him, which is that his intellectual understanding might be fantastic, but he hasn't really understood completely. In other words, he's not enlightened. So he asks her if she knows where he can find a teacher who can teach him the complete truth, and she tells him to go look for his teacher named Talopa, who turns out to be this wild man living out in the jungle somewhere. So here you have this professor, this great scholar, Naropa. One can imagine just searching throughout this jungle for, I think, 3 years or something, trying to find this crazy guy. We're supposed to show him the complete truth. And he has all sorts of adventures on the way. But the key point here in terms of the story we're going to tell today is Naropa is the kind of guy who tries to do everything just right. Perfect. He's a perfectionist. He's the kind of guy who got all straight A's in school. And he's hungry for accomplishments, for achievements. It's what you might call an overachiever. And the stories about what happened to him are, I guess you could call them funny. I mean, they might think they're painful. They're funny if you weren't Naropa. If you're not Naropa, they're pretty funny. So he goes and he meets this teacher and he realizes this guy is the real thing. And he's going to just do whatever this guy says, right? He's going to be the perfect student and attain enlightenment. But Talopa starts to give him some rather challenging, we might say, instructions. Like, for example, about once a year he would give him an instruction. The rest of the year, Naropa is sitting, practicing, meditating. And then Talopa comes in and says something like, does this, I think, 12 times in 12 years. If I had a student, they're up on a temple roof. You know, up there. It's a reasonably high roof. He said, if I had a student, he would jump off this roof. So he didn't really tell Talopa to jump off the roof. He said, if I had a student, he would jump off this roof. Talopa thinks, well, I'm a student. I'm a good student. He's trying so hard to be good.
Naropa,
sorry. Dyslexic. So Naropa jumps. And, you know, this is Buddhism, so no miracles happen. It's not like suddenly Naropa can fly and like a feather he floats to the ground. Smack. It just hits the ground. It hurts. Breaks all his bones. And Talopa comes down from the roof and says to him, he says this each time actually, what's the matter with you? Are you ill, my son? Is there something wrong? And Naropa says, not only am I ill, I'm almost dead. And Talopa says, Well, that's what happens when you believe in a self. That's what happens in your experience. Each time, and we don't notice it. This is the kind of thing you notice more and more the more you practice. Sit, sit, sit. Every time there's that little twist, every time there's that little moment of manipulation, deception, smack, you get hit. One way or the other. It's very painful to believe in a self. And Naropa goes through these experiences for 12 years. Some of them are really, you know, if I had a student, he would lie down in that field of leeches. Naropa's trying to be good, trying to do the right thing. He goes, lays down in the leeches. Of course, it doesn't work out so well. Or one time, I think he tells him there's a group of pretty rough people. And he says, if I had a student, he would go over there and steal all their money. He goes over there, he steals their money, they catch him, and they give him a pretty good beating. In other words, Naropa's involved actually what we call last week spiritual materialism. You know, it's really important to understand that we hear these lineage stories, and we can think about these people, and you see their pictures, and we can think, oh, yeah, I could never do what they did. They were just these unusual people that come along once every several thousand years. But they, if you read the stories, you realize it's just people just like us. Actually, we do the same thing. You know, we do the same thing all the time. As we have these misconceptions and we, you know, try to do the right thing and try to manipulate this situation or that situation, we think we're going to get this, we think we're going to get that, or we get depressed and we think we're not going to get this or that. It's all the same stuff. Each time we do it, one way or the other, we get smacked. In Naropa's case, he thinks, if he can just get it right, then the guru is going to save him and he'll attain enlightenment. And one of the funniest ways that happens a lot of times is people are coming up, they think, if I could just go out with a breath just right, then I'm going to attain enlightenment. Well, you know, there's no such thing. I've been practicing for 30 plus years and I still don't know what it goes. It means to go out with a breath exactly right. Never happens. And in fact, this particular lineage, the lineage of Tulapa Naropa, is called the mishap lineage. Mishaps. The more you practice, what you find is you can't get away. What we've been talking about, you can't get away with anything. The world always comes right back at you. Your karma comes right back at you. The world starts to have almost like a freaky quality, in that the world won't stay still. The world won't go your way. It won't go the way you want it to. So you start to feel like you're in some sort of intense, you know, ping pong game or something. Except that in this case, you've got hundreds of millions of very intense ping pong balls coming at you all the time, and you just have one paddle, and, you know. You feel that your experience is completely out of control, which it always was. You just never noticed it before. And that experience begins to haunt you. Nothing's solid. Everything's impermanent. There's no ego. There's no self. So in Naropa's case, he begins to feel like some sort of crazy man. He's out there practicing. He's actually becoming more and more awake. But he's out there in the middle of the jungle with this wild man. And at some point, after 12 years of this, out of nowhere, suddenly Tulapa picks up a slipper, slaps Naropa in the face, and nothing happens. It's the same thing. Slaps in the face, open space, nothing happens. No twist. There's, one could say, state without struggle or nonviolent state, which we call enlightenment. There was, at that moment, Naropa, almost by accident, except that that accident comes about because of his years of practice and devotion to the teachings and his teacher, doesn't do anything. The way to undo karma is by not doing anything. And we're going to talk about this more next week, what it means to not do anything. Gap. Open space. You don't do anything. There's no move. There's no twist. there's no trying to escape. At that moment, the game of karma, the karmic game called Naropa, in quotes, Naropa, had worn itself out. So the message here in terms of karma is that you can change your karma, you can change your life, and in fact you can actually change the world by not doing anything. We're going to leave it right there until next week. That's what we're going to be talking about next week. James.
So, is it all right if in your mind you're upset but you don't show it?
Sure. But that's not doing anything.
But like...
It's not a bad start.
So like if you get...
It's also okay if you show... You can show it too.
Suppose if you get slapped in the face with a slipper and the only thing you want to do is... If you get slapped in the face with a slipper and the only thing you want to do is flip at them, get mad, but you think that and consciously stop yourself from doing that...
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing?
Yeah. That's a good thing for a start. I mean, of course, it's not that you wouldn't be still creating karma at that point, because if there's still some kind of repression, you know, sort of having to push something down, that's still doing something. But source, of course, nevertheless, that's better than not striking back. The best thing to do at that point is to try to stay open. It's difficult. Now, sometimes situations come at you, it's really intense. And we can talk about there's no link between the present moment and the past, and, you know, it's just reflection in the mirror, but when it happens, it seems pretty darn real. But, you know, what the basic recommendation is, at that point, what you'll feel is that little, you know, like, and then just take head and shoulders and look out. Again, we're going to talk about that a lot next week. Sort of just what you do when you meditate. Your mind, you know, you're talking to yourself suddenly, you notice it.
Yes.
And then basically you say thinking about with your breath, which is, the whole point of that is not that there's some kind of, this is the magic technique, you say thinking about with your breath, but it's the closest we can come to not doing anything. See what I mean?
Yeah.
As close as we can come to not doing anything. It's practice in terms of not doing anything. And as you do that over and over again, you begin to actually have a sense of what it means, because you've already got that in you. You know, you've already got that ability to just be open is inherent in every human being. And so at some point, if you imitate it long enough, it just clicks in, and that natural openness begins to wake itself up.
And how does that, like, work out when it comes down to, like the world we're in right now? And if you just are, let's say, a pushover, you won't really, like, make your way.
Right.
If you just let everyone slap you in the face, then you're not going to really...
Well, we're not talking about that. You see, there's no formula for what comes next. We're just saying that it doesn't mean that you're a pushover or that you let people slap you in the face. But whatever you're going to do next, the whole point is it comes out of that openness rather than being a product of passion, aggression, or ignorance. It doesn't mean just, you know, it's not like that at all. Who knows? One time you might realize that the most awake thing to do is turn around and run. Who knows? Or it might be completely the opposite. There's no formula. That's the problem, is that in this world that you're talking about, people all have formulas. If somebody does that to me, man, I'm gonna kick his butt. Right, Caleb? We all have formulas. What we're talking about here is no formulas, no pat answers. It doesn't mean that if you see a truck coming down the street, you just, you know, in the form of whatever, you just stand there and let it run you over. Of course not. That's not very awake. But the whole idea is to be awake as opposed to going on automatic pilot, which then just creates a karmic game over and over again and again.
So should you...
Including, by the way, when you're playing football. I mean, no, really. I mean, you know, I play basketball, you know that, right? You know, if you're not awake, you go with some kind of formula, it doesn't work. I mean, it might work a little bit, but it's not that sort of beautiful play that you remember forever, right? Yeah. It's when there's just this sort of, you're awakened, there's some sort of spontaneous flow that happens. Actually, I think the first time I had experienced this kind of thing was when I was playing basketball. Just a moment when something just happens, you know.
Sometimes when you're clicking the most is when you're just in some sort of form of trance. You don't even think you're playing. Like,
yeah, I wouldn't call it a trance, but that's just a word thing.
Yeah.
Trance is to me like, more like you're hypnotized. I would call it more that there's you're awake. But I know exactly what you mean. I've read things, for example, I saw this guy at a restaurant in Los Angeles the last time I was there. One of the greatest, literally the few greatest basketball players who ever lived, this guy named Bill Russell, way, way, way before you guys' times, but he was amazing. And he said that there were times in games when he didn't know what the score was, what the time was, who was behind your head. He's just playing.
Yeah.
And that's, in a way, when he played the best. So I know what you mean. Julia, from your football experience,
that you're going to speak about. When you're like being awake, right, you should be aware of everything, right?
Well, I think we have to be careful about shoulds, because awake doesn't have too many shoulds in it. It's just awake. If you're really truly awaking, you're aware of what you need to be aware of. You know, everything. That's a pretty big word. Yeah. I mean, but you see what you need to see.
Mm-hmm.
You experience what you need to experience.
So you're
and in fact, that's an important point on Sandwich.
Yeah.
Is that's an important point is that it's all happening right in front of you, everything you need. And there's a lot of ideas these days that you have to go somewhere else and do some particular kind of activity, whatever it might be. But you can practice, in fact, the most perfect expression of compassion is at the most difficult. Are dealing with those everyday situations that are right in front of you right now. You know, maybe your family, your friends, your job. What you're experiencing right now. That's the hardest and it's also the best. I think that's why Trevor Rinsche always encouraged people, you know, to work, to get married, to have children. Because that's the ground of this kind of practice. That's something where you have to go off to Africa. You might, but you don't have to. Do it right here, right now. It's not something postponed for something more esoteric or unusual in the future. James?
So, in that state of when, like before you react and stuff?
Yeah.
And should you base your decision off, like, are you trying to think in the future? Because even though, like, the past has no link to the present,
right.
Should you be thinking, like, I'm not going to hit him back because this will just start all of this?
Well, to begin with, that's fine. Over time, what will happen, to begin with, that's quite good, actually, okay? Because usually the whole thing happens so fast that thought never even arises. Or if it does, you don't see it. You just speed right past it to your habitual reaction.
Yeah.
But it is a longer conversation, so to speak, but as time goes by, if you learn to stay with that moment of space, that gap, that openness, some kind of natural insight begins to arise about what to do.
But then wouldn't that be like a vicious cycle, because that just becomes its own formula every time that happens?
No, because you never know what it's going to be. You really never know what it's going to be. It's insight that arises, called insight that arises from space. And it's based on seeing what's in front of you, seeing what to do. And it's not, you can't make it happen. You can't say, well, my formula is the insight that arises from space, because it's not a formula. It's just like space isn't a formula. That's what I was trying to remember. I said, space, that space is not produced by circumstance. It's unconditional space. And I'm trying to be honest with you. We can teach a class and talk about karma, and it's worthwhile to do all the little ins and outs of the good and bad, good karma, bad karma. But they're all based on this understanding, which, as I said, it's dangerous to teach this. It really is. Because it could easily, that's why I make it such a big deal, because it's very easy to misunderstand. There's famous stories in the Buddhist tradition of people who did misunderstand. and heard this teaching about, let's say there's no link between the present moment and the past, or karma isn't real, or everything's empty, and then thought, well, you know, I just go off and do whatever I want. It didn't work out so well. And because there's no link between the present moment and the past, therefore, karma is completely efficient and precise. Because there's no link, because there's just that open space, because it's reflection in a mirror, therefore, every time you make that impulsive move, it's going to hit you right back. You can't possibly get away from it. Billy.
So, karma's not real. Is it not real in the sense that, like, I'm walking down the hall, and I hear some people talking about Billy's mom is dead or something, and I create this whole reality that my mom's dead, and I experience all the feelings that I would if my mom was dead.
Yes.
But really, she's fine. She's sitting at home drinking coffee or something.
Yeah.
But I've created this whole scenario just purely off of cause and effect.
Just purely off of
your tendency.
Let's say speculate or overreact or whatever. Yeah, it's very much like that. But it's like basically saying that everything's like that.
Yes.
Which is a big leap from, but that's great. That's terrific. That's a great example. Yeah, very good. Really good. Any more to that?
No, I was just thinking about that.
That's pretty good, though. Julia?
Well, if there's no link between the past and the present... Okay. So karma doesn't exist, right? There's no link.
As a solid thing.
But there is kind of a link because the past does affect... It doesn't affect your state of mind.
It's up to you, isn't it?
Is that what you mean? Like, your state of mind doesn't have to be altered based on what happened before.
No, it's based on what you're doing now. It's somewhat based on what happened before in the sense that you may have built up a tendency, you know, through lifetimes, let alone through this lifetime, to do what Billy was just talking about, to project, to react, to move away. But it's all based on just trying to avoid that space. That's the thing that's most important. It's to understand that the whole thing is based on trying to move away from that openness.
Yeah.
And the whole practice is based on staying with that openness. That's what we're going to talk about next week.
Even if your reaction isn't based on, like, habitual patterns or habitual, what you would do because, oh, someone punched me in the face, so now I have to do something. But isn't part of the past in the way, like, doesn't things that happen in the past, like, because maybe in the past, I decided not to do something, and then...
That still has an effect,
right.
So there is a link.
Well, you're doing it right now. There's no real link there. You show it to me. Where is it?
Not solid.
It's something, in other words, you're doing that, even just you're sitting there right now, as you're doing that in your mind right now. It happens now. It's so difficult to see sometimes.
You can act based on the link. So you shouldn't act based on that link?
Well, I think the first thing, I don't think you should be careful not to get into too many shoulds or shoulds. To begin with, just try to see that you're creating that link.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That goes a long way. They always do that. It's funny how they have a different idea about that.
Yeah.
That's a clue already. And of course, the whole thing is even more complicated by the fact that we're all doing it. So everybody's tendency to project is just bouncing off. It's quite a mess.
Yeah.
It's called samsara. Samsara is an ocean of suffering. Samsara is just doing the same thing over and over again. For
that,
no reason whatsoever.
What was that thing that you told me? It's like whirlpool.
Yeah. It's like a whirlpool. It just turns around over
and
over.
And then you said that there's like a gap.
It's always a gap.
But like, you've had some analogy that was good.
I remember.
Okay.
Might have made it up on the spot. I don't know.
You said that there are stories of famous examples of people who took one approach versus the other approach. Is that what you said a few minutes ago?
Yes.
Is that an easy story to tell, or?
We could tell the story.
I thought that might...
And for example, there was one of the most famous stories in the Buddhist tradition that's supposed to serve as a warning against this, so everything's empty, there's no link between the present moment and the past, so therefore, do whatever you want. And there was a teacher that presented this teaching to two students, his two sort of most advanced students that both really practiced a lot. No link between the present moment and the past, let's say. And one of them went off and thought, well, if that's true, I can do anything. And he did. You know, maybe killed people, and raped people, did all sorts of horrible things. But it's all empty, so what's the difference, right? And then there was another student. His other student thought, well, if there's no link between the present moment and the past, that means I have to be extremely precise in terms of my conduct. Because each time that I twist that understanding, it's going to cause harm to myself and others. So he went off and actually became even more precise, more disciplined in terms of his conduct, his behavior. And at some point, two students met up and had a big argument about this, you know, which one was right. So they decided to bring the argument to their teacher. And the teacher, of course, said, well, the second student's understanding was correct. You have to be even more disciplined once you receive a teaching like that. The first student got so angry at the teacher, the guru, for saying that he actually killed him. That's a real famous story.
Killed the guru?
Killed the guru, which is, you know, obviously not such a good thing to do. Like, you know, very, very, very bad. And the consequences, because, see, he still did believe there was a link between the present moment and the past. Obviously, why would you kill the guru for saying you're wrong? But he says you're wrong, then there's a gap. There's no link, so what's the problem? But obviously he just was thinking that. He hadn't really realized that. So he reacted very strongly, killed the guru, and the consequences were very pretty in terms of the sort of very hellish type state that his old aggression brought back to him. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
How did I have a further question here. The student that decided to be more precise, how did the student go from no link between the past, present, and future, and then deciding that that meant it needed to be even more precise? How did his understanding come?
Because he understood that there's a gap. When he felt the reaction, he realized, just to begin with, at least to not act on that passion, aggression, and ignorance reaction, just to stay still. And that's the closest you can get at that moment to the openness of space, is just to stay there. Because he understood that if there's no link, that means that the world is like a mirror. And if you react in there's a moment of space and you react in an aggressive way, that mirror is going to reflect back aggression to you, to therefore to your world. If you react in a sort of overly hungry way, or you know what you might call a passionate way, same thing. If you react in a stupid way, same thing. So that was his understanding. It's just don't do anything. When they don't do anything, doesn't mean that there's no activity. It just means that you don't do anything that's based on that impulse of three poisons, passion, aggression, and ignorance. Just don't, just skip it. I heard a teacher say once, just skip it.
So then,
just skip it.
The best thing to do, if someone does something mean to you, and you just use that gap, you just cancel that out, and you do something nice, and that mirror will reflect nice back to you.
Depends. You have to see. It might depend on the heavy. I don't want to give a formula here. Because it might depend on the heaviness of their aggression. I mean, let's say they're about to kill somebody else. You don't necessarily just stand there and experience your gap. Well, you do. But, you know, your intelligence that comes up might be stop them. Yeah. It doesn't have to be based on aggression. You can still do it. In fact, it might be more effective if it's just based on connection with space than aggression.
Impulse,
yeah, because, see, when you get involved in aggression, let's say in an extreme situation like that, you don't see what to do because you're blind. You're blinded by your own aggression. I mean, I had an experience like that once, actually, where somebody pulled a knife at me one day. He just ran at me. Bigger than, big guy.
How did you
Well, I don't know that it would have worked this way again, but what happened is I remembered just what we're talking about right now for some strange reason, and I just tried to wake, just woke up. Actually just sort of flashed, woke up. No idea what was going to happen next. And what came up my mind for some reason was instead of, you know, like you would usually back up, or I stepped forward and the knife went over my shoulder, and then I said, yeah, you don't want to do this. He stopped. Stopped, threw the knife down right away. Now, I don't know that that would happen again, but it was an interesting, you know, mini lesson for me, that just to see, you see what might have the possibility of seeing what needs to be done. When you react based on sort of small version of your world, sometimes your action is sloppy. It doesn't work. Yeah, you watch this, like, you know, basketball games when coach goes crazy, gets a technical foul, and the team loses the game. Let's give a real obvious example.
Yeah.
Somebody else had a question. No?
Oh, I was just going to say something.
Yes, Julia?
No. It was just a comment.
It's okay. What's your comment?
I was going to say it's interesting how people are exactly like mirrors, because they're like going through the same thing. So like you affect them, and then your state of
right.
mind reflects through them, and then you can see yourself
right.
through them.
Right. It's the ping pong ball.
Yeah.
And that's actually, when you really begin to see that more deeply, that's the beginning of compassion. Because, for example, you know, you might see, you don't have to, one doesn't have to do that. Then you realize everybody's doing the same thing that you've been doing.
Yeah.
And you kind of, instead of being maybe angry at that person, you start to see that you want to help them.
Because you can relate.
You can relate, exactly.
What if there's a consistent person who just consistently just puts forward just negativity and just will find anything to try and hurt you?
That's really a hard one. I remember I said the stuff closest to you is the most difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It's really difficult, and I mean, it depends on the situation.
A lot of the time you just want to try and ignore it, because sometimes that's the best thing to do. And
depends.
But sometimes you think, well, if I just sit here and just listen to this all the time, will this person actually stop, or will it make it worse?
Okay, but what are you doing at that point? You're thinking. Okay, which is, you know, is what we do, right? But the idea here, in terms of what we've been talking about tonight, is to try to be awake and see what comes up. Can I tell them to shut up? You know, you might leave. You know, you might see a way to help them. You might see how you're contributing to the situation. As I said, there's no formula. You might see anything. You might see that person's trying to help you. I'd say that person's trying to hurt you. But the whole point is, as long as we're talking to ourselves, yeah, that's just already there. What happens, just like we were talking about, when we gave the instruction on the sitting practice of meditation, is that there's a gap. Person says, let's say they criticize you, okay? First thing that happens, according to what we've been saying tonight, the very first thing that happens, whether we notice it or not, is there's some kind of gap or open space. And then we're, there's some kind of little panic, and then we start talking to ourselves. That's basically how it happens. Should I do this? Shouldn't I do that? They're a jerk. Maybe I should ignore it. Maybe I should do something. You know, 10,000 possibilities, all of which go nowhere. So what we're talking about here is that through the practice, through the sitting practice, very, very gradually in to have the possibility of waking up right in the middle of the most difficult situations in your life. Possibility. It's not guarantee. Then, ideally, what you would do next would proceed out of that kind of wakefulness, rather than that sort of small world of talking to ourselves. But we're all still trying to understand this.
Ideally, in that situation, you would just have your compassion would overpower your, like, how they were hurt. Their words would affect you less, and so you would use
the right word, ideally.
Yeah.
Every situation's different, right?
Yeah.
And that's really the key point. Every situation is different.
No, but even, like, aside from that, like, every situation is different, but in a situation where somebody's trying to hurt you through aggression, you might realize that, like, that instead of being hurt by their words, you would feel compassion towards them.
Yeah.
Because they're in pain.
Yeah,
their aggression
true.
Is reflecting their
that's,
pain.
That's true, but what comes next is undetermined.
Yeah.
You know, for example, this happens a lot. You know, going around and teaching and doing meditation instruction, people would come in, and usually a woman, almost always, and you know, they're in a relationship where, let's say, they're getting physically beaten up or abused by their husband or the guy that they're with. And they're having trouble. It's kind of obvious, maybe, that they should get out of there. But they're having trouble because they're blaming themselves. You know, this is a very common thing. Those of you who know about this kind of stuff, well, I'm doing it, and if I could just be more this way or that way, then maybe he would stop. And there's no formula for a solution to that situation except to wake up. And then you might leave, you might see a way through, you might find a way to work with that person. You know, you might have to go to the police and get protection. But the point is, because they're still churning, they don't see what to do. And there's not necessarily any one answer. I mean, there might be a lot of times, but there's not necessarily any one perfect answer to any situation, except when you see it. When you see it, I remember there was somebody in our community, and she was in a relationship that was threw a lot of bad things at me. And she kept going to the videographer and asking him what to do. And he wouldn't say anything. And then one day she saw it for herself in that case when she had to leave. She went, she saw him, and she told him, he said, I've been waiting years for you to tell me this. Because he realized that people have to see it for yourself. You know, in another situation, he might have told somebody the first time that they asked him, get out of there, or keep trying to make it work, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in this particular case, he saw that if he'd said that to the person the first time, they wouldn't have even listened to him. They're going to have to see it for themselves. And so, again, it's always different. Yeah, compassion's certainly the answer. But then what happens next? Compassion doesn't mean you stay out in the street and get run over by the truck, because you have compassion for the truck. It's not true. Okay? So, great questions. Why don't we, unless somebody has a burning question, why don't we stop there? Now, then you get the Oreos. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Dharma Classes on Chronicles Radio, a production of the Chronicles of CTR. Thank you to Tim Hutchings for his work on audio recording and post-production sound editing. Support for Dharma Classes comes from our listening audience. To contribute, please visit chroniclesradio.com and click on Support This Work. Thank you for your support.